The fourth class in the precept series. I'm going to start with my usual kind of generic information so that everybody's kind of on the same page. This class is something we do every year. We study the precepts, and it leads up to Jukai, which is the ceremony for giving and receiving the precepts. And we have a week-long retreat, February 15th through 21st. And then on the 21st, which is a Sunday, we'll have the actual precept ceremony. If you're interested in taking the precepts, you need to contact me, and we'll set up an interview so that I have a sense of where you're at with it and can give you some information and make sure that we're all, you know, we all understand what is going on here and what it's about. It's usually about a half an hour. It's not scary. Nine people so far have survived such an interview, so we'll see what we go. So we have, in the hall, we have some copies of the 16 Bodhisattva Precepts, the Kyoju Kaimon, and we usually have a link on the chat, but if you don't, it's not a big deal. Look at the, you can go to the website calendar, and there's a link there for the Kyoju Kaimon. And there's also a link to my email address, so if you wanted to contact me for either any kind of questions or to set up an interview, is fine. So, okay, so the overview, the sort of outline of the Kyoju Kaimon, I like to go over this so that we are all clear about it, in case you weren't here for the service that we did, evening service these days, we're reciting this. The first paragraph has to do with transmission and contrition. So transmission has to do with the fact that it has come down to us through about 2,600 years from Shakyamuni Buddha and through many other teachers and ancestors all the way through that time. So we didn't invent this. It's been handed down to us by many people. The way we begin on this path is with the contrition. It's with contrition where we begin to realize that things are not going the way we want them to go, and that that has something to do with what we're doing, and that we need to do something different. We need to change our lives in some way in order to you know, be careful about, anyway, we intend to do better, you know, so we realize things haven't been going well, now we want to do better. So then we take refuge in the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, which signals our intention to orient our lives around our highest self, or the Buddha nature in each of us, the truth, the Dharma, and a community of others who are likewise aligned. So last week, we talked about the three pure precepts, which is kind of a high-level way of expressing some of how we start putting these precepts into practice, these intentions that we have identified into practice. Now we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty of the 10 grave precepts, and tonight we're going to look at the first five of them. Next week, we will do the second set of five, the last five. The first five are given by Great Vow Zen Monastery or Heart of Wisdom Zen Temple in a ceremony that they call the five precept ceremony, and people get wagesas. Wagesas, do you have one? No.
Sorry.
You have a wagesa, right?
I do not.
You have a wagesa. I know that, I knew I'd seen one tonight. Okay. Let's just show what it looks like. Come on up here, and I'll just take it. Can you take it off? It's a, I know you've got a, that whole earbud thing, it kind of gets tricky. There we go. Beautiful. So this is a wagesa, and this is what we give for the Jukai ceremony. And it is basically, as you see, kind of a strap that goes around the neck, and then it has these knots on each end that tie. So it ends up being a circle. Well, Gesa just means, thank you, just means small Kesa. So the Kesa is the big robe that we wear. It was the Buddha's robe. All of these, and then this is a Rakusu. Mine is gold, and Yutun has a black one. This is a smaller version of the Kesa as well. All of these are versions of the Buddha's robe that we wear for various reasons or practices. So as I mentioned, Great Vow or Heart of Wisdom, they have this five precept ceremony, which is basically taking these first five precepts, and they're saying, this does not make you a Buddhist, this just makes you an ethical person. You are, you're committing to live an ethical life. So they do this first, and before they do what they call Jukai, and what a lot of other places in, a lot of other Zen groups in the United States. For them, what Jukai means is basically what we're doing, except that they require a lot more. You have to sew a Rakusu like this, and you get a Dharma name when you take the precepts in this manner. That's not how we do it here. How we do it here is we give you the 16 precepts right from the get-go. And all that means is that you have decided you're going to commit yourself to working with these precepts and transform your life with them. And then for us, when we take a teacher and become a lay disciple, that's when we sew a Rakusu and get a Dharma name. So it's a little different level of commitment. Here, taking the precepts does not commit you to Dharma reign, to our lineage, or to becoming a member, or any of that. It just means you're going to live your life as a Buddhist, as someone who is following these precepts. So, and then there's a lot of different ways that other lineages do this kind of stuff. There are several which, I think in the Tibetan tradition, you take refuge in the three treasures, and that's how you become a Buddhist. So it's kind of interesting. And then they have all these other practices and so on. So it's not as though you can say, okay, so I wasn't a Buddhist before, but now I am. Or you can say, I don't even know if I'm a Buddhist now, but whatever. However you want to define it, however you feel about it is fine. I think we just use this word Buddhist as a way of saying, I'm following the Buddha's path. So back to the five precepts. Obviously, trying to cover any of them in depth, and trying to cover five of them or 10 of them in one class is crazy. You know, you can't really go very far or very deeply into them. And we're going to look at one, or actually we're each going to look at some, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the first one, Do Not Kill, as a way of sort of giving you a sense of how we work with all of them. And as you start working with them, you discover that they're also kind of intertwined, and there's a couple of them that I have a hard time, pulling apart even. So, these 10 great precepts follow a particular format. So first there's a prohibitory statement, the do nots, followed by a prescriptive statement, which is do this instead. And then there's commentary. So traditionally, the first paragraph in the commentary is by Bodhidharma, who's an ancient Chinese ancestor, and the second is by Dogen, who's a 13th century Japanese ancestor. Dogen is pretty carefully documented. We have a lot of information about Dogen. Bodhidharma is way farther back and is a little bit, I wouldn't say exactly mythical, although there's a lot we don't know about Bodhidharma, and so it's a little bit harder to completely nail down what he said and what he didn't say. But traditionally, that's the way it's been attributed. So the first five grave precepts look pretty familiar: killing, stealing, misusing sexuality, lying, and intoxication. And these are similar to precepts, commandments, rules laid down by all of the major religions of the world. And it has been said that if everyone in the world actually followed these five, the world would be a very different place. Still, we still work with these in a way that is a little different than a lot of other religions. So, in the first place, we don't use the precepts to decide who is good and who is bad. We know that everyone will break the precepts. That is a given. It's impossible not to do so. For example, we cannot live without killing. Starting with breathing and eating and moving into different interpretations of killing, like killing someone's enthusiasm, for example, we all kill all the time. So what's the point of having a precept if we can't keep it? There's a question for you. All of the precepts describe a life lived in balance with our true nature, and one that is less likely to lead to increasing suffering in the world. They can be used as signposts pointing to actions that are likely to lead us away from our true path and make it harder to practice, and more likely to cause suffering both to ourselves and others. So that's one thing. Here are some thoughts about the first one, do not kill. So that one says, do not kill. Cultivate and encourage life. So the do not kill is the prohibitory. The cultivate and encourage life is the prescriptive. In the realm of the everlasting Dharma, holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing. The life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha. I just love the line that says, holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing. I find this to be compelling and wonderful. It says that our intention matters. It is not everything, but it counts. Here's what Kyogen says in the study guide. I like the Zuni customs performed after killing a deer. They hold its muzzle up to their face and inhale, and then say a prayer to draw the life from the deer, honoring the life they've taken. Then they make a medicine bundle using specific parts of the animal to bury with honor on the spot. While life may be taken, it's not cut off. We may have to take a life to sustain our own. If we honor it, then I think we're doing the best we can with this precept. No life can be cut off. I take this life to continue life. And so, if our intention is to cut off, we are in delusion. The commentary says that no life can be cut off. I've heard many stories from people about killing animals and people, that those animals or people are alive with them for the rest of their lives. This precept just says what is true about how it works. Yes, we are interdependent. Yes, we live by killing. And yes, there are karmic consequences to all of it. Ultimately, it's not so much whether it's good or bad. It just is. And it has consequences. We pay attention to how it works, and over time, allow what we observe to inform us about our relationship with so-called others, as well as to ourselves. Kyogen ends this section of the study guide this way. We keep the precept not so much for the absolute rule of not killing, but because it opens us to empathy and connection. Our main concern is for our own spiritual sanity, and when we cultivate that, the whole cosmos benefits. Okay, what's our time looking like? Okay. I think we can, if people have questions or comments at this point, we could take a few moments to do that, and then we'll go into breakout groups.
Chat box, but I'm wondering if Christian, would you be willing to read those out loud? Hi, yeah, I can read those out loud. Give me one sec to pull it up in the chat. Okay, so Genko, this is more regarding something you were talking about before you started talking about the do not kill precept.
Uh-huh.
I wrote, I have a question about taking the precepts regarding something that Genko said. Is it possible to take the precepts without, quote-unquote, becoming Buddhist? The main reason I am taking this class and will be attending Jukai is because I fully believe in the Buddhist path as a way to guide my life, but I hesitate about identifying as Buddhist or really with any label. Uh-huh. However, I would say I do have faith, full faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha.
Right. Yeah, this has been brought up by others as well, and there is something about trying to take on that label. This is a traditional way that we talk about it, but I think there are some ways to work with this. I mean, I've heard that the Buddha didn't come to make Buddhists; he came to make Buddhas. So, and I like that. You know, I think that's really what it's about. The word Buddhist is mostly a kind of it's a label so that it's a way to distinguish us, if you want to say it that way, from, you can say from the way we were before, or you can say from paths, different paths that other people follow. There's a bunch of different ways you can kind of translate that. And I think we actually translate things all the time. So in this case, translating what it means to become a Buddhist, you know, it can be pretty individualistic. So what it means for me to become a Buddhist or to be a Buddhist might be different from what it might mean for you to be a Buddhist. The way we are united is in following the precepts. So, and it has to do with, you know, with following a path. So we can think of it as following the Buddhist path. We can think of it as, how would I say this? We can think of it as sort of being, of aspiring to become Buddhas, aspiring to enlightenment or awakening. Or we can think about it as simply trying to live our lives in accordance with the Buddhist precepts, which is, I think, what we're really trying to do here. And we're using the word Buddhist as a sort of a shorthand for all of that. That's kind of the way I think of it. That's my translation of it, I guess. So, does that help?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. That helped a lot, actually.
Okay. Good.
Well, I have a question. Why should we have to translate?
What was this?
Why should we have to make this translation? I think what Christian is getting at and what, you know, I'm getting at is...
Yeah, well, I think it has something to do with, as I say, it is traditional. That's what's been handed down to us from our teacher's teacher, I believe. I don't know exactly where the original language of this came from, but, and I don't know if she's translating it from the Japanese or, you know, where that came from exactly. So at this point, you know, and there have been some talk about, you know, maybe we should change change how we say it, and we might, you know, we'll probably continue to talk about that a bit. But at this point, that's what we're doing, as far as I know. I don't anticipate that we're going to change it for this year. We'll see.
Okay, thank you.
To clarify on that, does that mean we could take the precepts even if we feel like we don't want to say I identify as a Buddhist, as long as I feel like those precepts are in alignment with me? So I think that was also kind of...
Well, here's the other part of it. Becoming a Buddhist is not, it's not exclusive. So we have people who consider themselves devout Christians or Jews or Muslims or nothing in particular, humanists or atheists or whatever. All of that is completely possible. So it's not exclusive, and it isn't at all trying to say we're this and totally not that. It really is just about zeroing in on, you know, we're trying to live our lives in a particular way. That makes sense?
I think so. Thank you.
Okay. Good questions. Okay. I think let's go into breakout groups. Let's see, what do we have here? 2, 3, 4. All right, I think we're going to have groups of 5. And it looks like we're going to have, okay, but before we do, we're not going to do anything just yet. Let me explain what we're going to do. This is going to be a little bit different tonight. What I'm going to do is I'm going to assign one precept to each group. So we're going to end up with 5 groups, 4 of them on Zoom and 1 in here. Okay? So it'll be groups, it looks to me like groups of 5 on Zoom. And, wait a minute, so you need to pay attention to and remember your group number. Because, and then what I want you to do is discuss the precept that your group is assigned. And then have someone be prepared to report back to the whole class once you've had that discussion. So I'll give you 20 minutes, which isn't a huge amount of time, but I want to have some time to share what everyone has found in their discussions afterwards. So here's some suggested questions. You don't have to remember these or write them down, but here's some possible questions to consider. What is this precept getting at? How do I meet this precept in my daily life? What's easy about it? What's hard about it? What are some other ways to interpret it? What's an example of a circumstance that requires me to pay attention to this precept? What does it mean to fail to keep this precept? So those are some questions. There might be others, but just to kind of get you moving on it and thinking about it. So group number 1 is going to consider the first grave precept, do not kill. Group number 2 will be the second, do not steal. Group number 3 will be the sexuality. Group number 4 will be lying. And the group here in the Zendo will be do not become intoxicated. Okay? All right.
Can you repeat? Never mind. I see it's in the chat.
Aha! Utone's on the ball. Okay. Yep. All right. All right, how do we do? Let's start with group number 1 on the first precept on do not kill. You have somebody who's ready to report kind of the stuff that you came up with?
Yes. I'm Cheryl. And I encourage my group, if I leave out stuff, I warn them that I have a tendency to lose all of these amazing things that we've talked about. But we look at... from both kind of the literal, where, you know, some people in the group had been vegetarian for many years. And on the flip side of that, like the challenges sometimes to even see the, like a direct application of not realizing that there is an animal involved, not making a connection that vegetarianism would mean an animal was not being eaten, for instance. And so we just really could see that there's so many layers and different ways that killing and an idea of increasing life can be worked with through this. So one of the really beautiful things that came up, there were a number of things, but, you know, your comment, Genko, on, not killing enthusiasm helped prompt things like where might we shut down another person's, voice or opinion or want to encourage those voices to come out in order to help increase the life that is coming through, that is present. I don't know, group, but if there's other things that we want to throw in there. All right, thumbs up. And just on an aside, if Yutan or somebody else might be able to, in the chat, put in those questions that you had thrown out, Genko. Those are just really lovely directive questions that we'd like to ponder more.
They were not intended to be directive questions. They were just to kind of get you kind of thinking about it and give you some ideas.
It was right.
Not at all intended to be, you have to answer all these questions now.
No, we didn't take it as such, but we thought, wow, those were amazing questions. So.
All right, group two, do not steal.
That was us. So we had a really good discussion. We actually didn't really talk about like how we'd practice it so much in terms of stealing or how to avoid that, just because of our interpretation of it. So I think we all agreed that in practice it's pretty straightforward in terms of precept, right? It's just don't take from people. That's pretty clear in terms of intentionality. Don't steal. But we mainly discussed again the interpretation, because we thought it had a lot of implications for a few different themes in Buddhism. So, for example, one that we talked about was duality, and what that implies for stealing. Well, it kind of implies that there's a difference between me and the thing that I want to steal, or me and the object of my attachment. And that was another big theme that came up, was kind of taking stealing as attachment to self, and as wanting to attach things to oneself. I guess kind of the last thing that we were talking about was, and this goes with attachment and duality, as well as implications of non-self, and how we attach to things, if we can take stealing as attachment, to ourselves, in order to kind of erect this facade of who I am, and thinking that, oh, if I just get this car, if I get this job, if I take this and I have possession of it in the form of stealing, ostensibly, then that will give me a story, and that's who I am. And so ultimately, one of the most fundamental things that we need to detach from, since attachment is such a big thing, is our sense of self, and realize that whether you steal, or for that matter are stolen from, there's really nothing to be gained or lost. So I think that kind of sums up most of what we're talking about. We talked a little bit about Dogen, Alan Watts.
Okay, very nice. That whole, how does that go? Having no intention of, or no, something about not gaining. How does that go?
No thought of gain.
No thought of gain. Right, because, you've set it up very nicely about how there's no gain or loss at all, because the self and the things of the world are all, we're all there. We're all just right there. So that's pretty cool. Very nice.
Oh,
all right.
Yes? One more thing to add is with the last phrase, the gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. I mentioned that the idea of having nothing to be gained or nothing to be lost, and the reason why it stands open wide is because of our Buddha nature.
Yeah.
Because like we already have.
It's just there. Yeah. Yeah. Good. All right. What about group three, sexuality?
We had my name's Carter. We had a great discussion in group three, and it really kind of we talked initially a lot about the phrase coveting or creating a veneer of attachment. And just sort of that really, I don't know, led us in a lot of good directions. Just kind of this idea that really trying to see something or someone as they actually are, that's, and not to see them as anything else, or see them as a story that you've created or an image that you've created. That we felt like that was sort of at the crux of this precept. And it was interesting, you know, you kind of, your immediate thought is that it's this precept in sexuality is sort of about, I don't know, two people, but we actually talked a lot about how it can apply just to yourself and developing that same respect for yourself and being, and not setting up sort of images about yourself. We talked, that led us into talking a bit about sort of the value of a meta practice and how you can sort of see yourself impartially. And that had a very, the kind of a dignified, effect. This, a good, really beautiful image came up in our conversation about two people in a relationship, not facing each other, but facing outward to the world. And that kind of, that sort of freedom, that if people in a relationship can find that type of freedom, that it's so, just beneficial, and powerful. So I think that's kind of the core of, what we got to in our conversation.
Yeah. There's a term for that, that business of looking at someone and not seeing them as they are. I've heard the word thought coverings. So it's kind of that image we create of someone when we see them that isn't who they are. It's who we want them to be. And that's part of what this is getting at. So, and we do that all the time. And you have to really stop and be really clear as you can be about that, because what ends up happening with a lot of relationships is you end up sort of feeding into each other's delusions about yourself and about the other person. And that's when you have this toxic relationship, which we'll get into in our group. So a little bit of a thing there. All right. So group number 4, which is about speaking dishonestly. Anyone from group 4?
We didn't get around to designating
a
social.
Uh-huh. Well? Okay, I'll go, Genko. We wandered around a lot in the metaphor of impossibly saying the right thing, and that everything is okay and full of life the way it is, and do we dare to put our feet in the water? So we wandered around in that, in the language quite a bit, and the limitations of language, even if we do decide to say something, that not only might it not be the right thing, but it might really be unnecessary, and sometimes it might be important not to say anything. And we got a clear picture of the connection between this precept and some other precepts, like praise and blame, like the precept against taking life. And it was a pretty awesome discussion, and it got into some speech that if we put our foot in the water, even if it's an honest comment, it could be dangerous. So we have to take, and this is in our time that we're living in, and so, you know, many of us are suffering through, and so how do we think about that? How do we not think about it, but where do we stand, and what do we say? We want to say something. We don't want to be hurt. We don't want to be. Or do we just walk away? It was a good discussion. It was great.
Great. I always, when you say all this, it reminds me, one of the things I'd like to bring up when we're talking about right speech, there's a lot of different sort of sets of rules or acronyms or whatever. My favorite is the THINK acronym. So it's THINK. So is it true? Is it helpful? Is it intelligent or intelligible? Is it necessary, which you talked about? Is it necessary to say? And is it kind? So for me, that's an easy one to remember because of the THINK, the acronym. And I think all of those things, the Buddha had a list of some sort, which I no longer, I can't remember because it's not quite as simple. Yeah. Yeah, and it has a lot of those same elements in it about, you know, any after a while you start realizing, well, because he says you can speak if it's like this, but not if it's like this. And pretty soon all of the knots, the reasons to not speak, make it pretty clear that for the most part you should probably not say anything. And, you know, it's interesting to try to get to a place where you're really not speaking. And my teacher Kyogen said at one point that, you know, in meetings, it's like, oh, I have to say this. And he said he got to the point eventually more and more to where he didn't feel like it was necessary to say anything. And sure enough, pretty soon someone else would make his point for him. So it can be an interesting practice to just be quiet. And on the other hand, it's also possible to use that as a way to hide and as a way to not engage. And, you know, it's, again, no particular rule about it. It's something we have to kind of keep working at and finding what is true. What is the way to say what is true as the best you can, regardless of the limitations of the language. So, great. Sounds like y'all had a good time there. Good discussion. So here in the hall, we talked about intoxication. Is someone else in the group wanting to talk a little bit about what we talked about? Because I took notes, of course, because I can't hardly go do a discussion without taking notes. So I'll share a little bit about what we talked about. So we started out talking about alcohol and drugs and then realized it's, you know, broader than that. Pretty clearly, especially once you get into the commentary, it becomes very clear that it's not just about alcohol and drugs. It's about clinging to something. We talked about daydreaming can be intoxicating, thinking about the past, thinking about the future. We got into quite an interesting discussion about addiction and addiction to various things like relationships, attraction or attachment produce some of the same physical chemicals. So there's a physiological component to it. And this line that says no intoxicants can be taken in, we had to think about that one for a little while about how, well, maybe if you get clear about your relationship to whatever this problem, whatever causes you problems has been, that it may not be toxic to you anymore. And it's possible to have a healthy appetite for something, but if you get to the place where you have to have it, then that's a delusion and that's where we run into trouble. We talked about craving, we talked about doom scrolling as one of those things that people indulge in, you know, the scrolling along. If I just find one more thing, if I just find one more thing on my phone or on my computer. And we talked about hungry ghosts. We talked about all of the different, not all of the different, but several of the different things that sometimes can be identified as addictive, and that it's very hard to identify for someone else what might be an addiction. So those are some of the things that we talked about. I mean, there were other things as well that people were talking about. Anybody have some other things they would want to throw into that discussion? Okay. Well, this is great. I hope you all at least got a little bit of a sense of how we work with these, and that. So one of the things to say about all of these precepts is that they have many layers, and I think I said that earlier on in the class, but as we work with them more, we start seeing that more and more. And and I think as we kind of keep working with them, we start seeing a variety of ways that we could look at them. So, and then the other thing I would say is that if you look at all five of these, and actually it continues on, there's a pattern there where it's like in the realm of the something or other Dharma, here's what we could say about it. And so you can kind of look at all of those things and begin to see some of the connections. So some of the connections we talked about here tonight about, you know, how, what was it Bukai said about, the thing with dishonesty connecting with praise and blame in particular, and the killing precept is in another one. The thought coverings and the relationships under the sexuality one, definitely we talked about relationships also under intoxication. So there's a bunch of different ways that you can start seeing the connections among these different precepts, and those are pretty interesting too. I've been studying the precepts for, 20 years, and finding that, or 21 or so, I don't know, a lot. Anyway, a long time. And finding that there's always more. There's always more to kind of consider and discover about them. So keep at it. Keep looking at these. Keep checking it out and seeing how that's going to go. And next week, we will be talking about the next five, which is the do not dwell on past mistakes, do not praise self or blame others, do not be mean with dharma or wealth, do not indulge anger, and do not defame the three treasures. So there's a lot to all of those. They're not quite as obvious or common or familiar as the first five, but there's a lot there in all of them. So see what you think, and we'll talk about those next time. Any last comments or questions? Was there something that showed up in chat? Or Yutuan has a project she's doing, so she's not quite as attentive tonight, which is okay. Okay.